No, this is Sonia Sanchez.
Hey, Bubala, are you over there?
I'm here, sweetie.
I know you are. Okay.
I thought that was our cue, but
no, no, it's not. Here it is. It's coming.
Second cue.
99.5 FM in New York.
Thank you, Sonia Sanchez, for that station ID for us here at WBAI. It's 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me today, three amazing human beings: Jana Valerio, Linda Vanella, and one of my closest, dearest friends, Aura Yamini Morrison. We steal Aura today in between her incredible busy schedule. We scooped her out. And I said, Aura, we have one day before we start doing the marathon. I want you to get in here and teach us a little about what you know. And Aura is usually busy helping people out one way or another. She's a therapist. And she's been doing a lot of family therapy work recently. And part of the family therapy work that she's been doing is working with couples. We're all vulnerable in love. It goes with the territory. We're more emotionally naked with those we love, and sometimes we hurt each other with careless words or actions. While these things sting, the pain is often superficial and fleeting. It just comes and it goes. But almost all of us have at least one additional exquisite sensitivity, a raw spot in our emotional skin that is tender to the touch, easily rubbed, and deeply painful. Do you know your raw spot? That one place that you have that if it gets touched, the pain goes right down to your kishkis. For some people, it might be being somebody getting angry at you. For other people, it could be being abandoned. It could be being blamed. Being held wrong. Seeing yourself as making mistakes. When this raw spot gets abraded, it can bleed all over your relationship. You lose emotional balance. You find it hard to recover. And you plunge into dialogues that are demonic with each other. So what exactly is this raw spot? And this is why I wanted to have Aura in with us today. It's kind of a hypersensitivity. But Aura, when you work with couples and somebody is, I mean, one of the things you're always looking at is you're saying they're having a normal conversation, and then you spot the raw spot, right? I mean, do you look for it? Are you always aware that it exists with every couple?
Yeah, actually, it turns into not a normal conversation, but all of a sudden things get quickly heated, very hot, and it deteriorates very quickly, and it gets into a common dance of blame. I'm bad. No, who's bad? Who's that? You're bad. No, I'm bad. No, it's not me. It's you. It's not me. It's you. It's not me. You're back and forth. And then they're off and running, and they're totally out of touch with the feeling underneath it. And I have to interrupt them. Through interrupting them, I teach them to interrupt their own demonic pattern and to get in touch with the more raw, vulnerable feelings.
So you're saying that you see, but once it gets triggered,
yes.
Once the raw spot gets triggered, right? We're going to have to explore the different raw spots in people.
Yeah.
once it gets triggered, that's it. You're done. Like, I have a friend who has a woman he's madly in love with. But she has this tendency to say, I'm out of here. And he hates nothing more in the world than hearing that.
Right.
And she's made a deal, oh, I'll never say that, I'll never say it, I'll never say it, I'll never say it, and then boom, I'm out of here. He once refused to buy her a ring for her wedding finger. He said, because I never want to see you throw it at me, and I know you will one day. Because in your rage, you're going to do that. Not because she's wrong to do it. Wedding rings are for throwing. That's why they make them round. But the real reason was because he couldn't stand that betrayal, that exit, that abandonment. And that's his raw spot.
Right.
So he protected his whole life from ever being left.
Right.
Nobody would have the power to do it. He would only go out with people who were crippled, who had, you know, they weren't unable to move away, I meant. People who were dependent, people like that, people who needed him. That would be the way he would secure his life.
Right. Saying I'm out of here sends him into what we call primal fear, primal panic of losing your most important person. That is your emotional sustenance.
Well, some people don't consider it, I'm out of here, as their primal pain. They say, all right, we'll go take a walk and come back.
Right, exactly. They feel secure
that
area.
But to certain people...
For somebody else, it might not be that, but you could say, all right, I can handle that. You can come, go for a walk, come back.
So the raw spot always touches a primal fear.
Primal fear of something that happened in a primary relationship in childhood.
Oops. Here we go. Okay, this is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella and Ori Amini Morrison here. We're talking about some of the discoveries about reactivity in couples during relationships when they're trying to have conversations and talk about something. And we're talking about how you might hit a raw spot. It's called a raw spot. Now, Aura says, hey, but that's a primal spot. Primal means it touches on something that happened in your childhood. Take it further, Aura.
So it's possible that for this, whoever is react to leaving, that actually for them there are so many scenes, not just one scene, but so many scenes with your primary care person, mother, father, whoever really you bonded mostly with, or maybe both, would leave. And for example, I have one client I'm working with that her mother actually left, and then she got remarried. And she was barely present. And then she wanted her daughter to visit her, even when the daughter was visiting, the mother was focusing on her new husband rather than on the girl. So for her, the threat of leaving the relationship is the worst thing. That even just stepping out the door that throws her into panic.
The threat of the other person stepping out.
Yeah, of her husband walking out just for a breather from the fight was very threatening.
You know, you got to be lucky like me, because me, I have an argument with somebody. I know they're coming back because I'm the best thing in town.
Right. So when you have that kind of confidence, it's not a problem. It's not an issue. Okay, walk. I know you're coming back. No problem.
I know you love me. I know you're coming back. And...
we'll take a breather. Great. Makes sense. And actually, some of us therapists, some actually recommend a breather. But for some reason, say, oh, no. I can't. And then they need to learn that, the person who leaves says, I'm coming back, to actually say, I'm stepping out 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I'll be right back. So once you say, I'll be right back, it helps your partner to tolerate the 10 minutes.
Well, I found another way of helping partners who can't tolerate a temporary separation, because they don't really believe that the separation is temporary. The way to do it is make sure you keep the other person's cell phone. You let them go, but don't let them take your cell phone with them. Okay, you could go for a walk, but I'm keeping your cell phone. That's it.
Right.
They'll be back.
That's a good one.
They'll be back. primal fears. Let's talk about this. Let's continue with this aura, with the primal fears. Yeah. In the primal fears that people have with their parents, is it always an enactment of the same thing? Abandonment? What are the kind of fears that people have from childhood? What kind of things would happen?
You mentioned being yelled at.
Okay.
Being yelled at is another one. And being blamed is another one. You know, they kind of go together sometimes, being yelled at and being blamed. So the child, when they experience the parents yelling at them and blaming them, they feel abandoned. They feel alone because they lost their parents emotionally. So the parents are still there physically, but emotionally it's a loss of the connection.
What would be so difficult? Let me think about this with you, okay? What's so difficult about being blamed? If you're a child and your parents are blaming you for their misery, and they're saying, it's your fault, I can't ever do it. You must partially believe it.
Yeah.
In order for it to affect you.
Because
right. If your mother says to you, it's your fault, my lipstick is on wrong. Yeah, Ma. No, it's not my fault. But what must happen to you as a child that you believe that it is your fault? Some kids I know said, somebody once said to me, you know, when I was born, he said, somebody walked into my crib and said, it's your fault, and I believed him from the very minute I was born.
Yeah.
It's your fault.
Yeah. Well, actually, the kids are very self-centered. They don't have enough concept of the other. So it's very easy for them to blame themselves, even when you say to them, but it's not your fault. We're separating, but it's not your fault. They still tend to think that it's their fault because they're so self-centered. They only see themselves.
Oh, wait a minute. How does that make it your fault if you're self-centered?
Meaning that you can only, you see yourself in an exaggerated way as the center of the universe, the center of these people's lives, and the center of your life, obviously. And if you are the center, then everything that happens stems from you.
So it's kind of, it goes into that belief that you're powerful, that
yeah.
you have all that power.
There's a distorted sense of power. On one hand, you're very powerless, but on the other, you have a distorted sense of your power.
Okay, so now here you are. You're an adult. You're having an argument with your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and your mother or your father, and then something triggers you. Your raw spot gets hit, and like you say, Aura, the minute it gets hit, you can see the reaction.
Yes.
Some people, you talk about one thing, like, you know, jealousy will trigger it sometimes. Right. Compare the person to somebody else, it'll trigger something in them.
Right.
Abandonment will trigger this thing. We've got to say there are two parts to it. That you may be sensitive in your raw spot, but your partner is also going to know about your raw spot, and they're going to use it when they need to hurt you. When they need to create once you part of love is handing your raw spot over to a partner and having them use it at will. It's brutal, but I think it's what the openness is about. So now, here's my raw spot. Handle it gently. Please handle it gingerly. Should be at the every proposal, you know. Do you promise to love and obey and to handle each other's raw spot gingerly?
Well, it should be in the marriage contract, right?
Should be in the marriage or the mating contract. Linda, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, Aura, like when you spoke about when someone has a conflict and that person would tend to leave, and of course the other person would feel abandoned. I think oftentimes of how children are taught, oh, you're angry, go to your room, make a time out. So oftentimes people are kind of thinking, not so much feeling, but they're thinking maybe it's best I step back from my feeling. So that I can right. kind of reorganize myself and then come back rather than fuel the anger.
Right.
And like you're saying, being able to identify those feelings, I think, is another piece of conflict, which is oftentimes a miss.
Right. Yeah. So you're talking about the person who leaves. They need to leave because they learn that that's how they can organize their feelings and then come back and be able to regroup.
But if they leave inefficiently, then they're repeating their pattern.
Right.
So in other words, let's say you know you have a tendency to walk out.
Right.
Or stonewall. Let's say I know a man who's, every time he gets under attack, he stonewalls his partner. He just goes dead. If he just goes dead, he's going to repeat the pattern. She is going to keep bombarding him. She's going to blame him. He's going to go deeper inside to kind of run away from her. Same pattern.
Right.
With your help, he stonewalls, but he says, excuse me, I'll be back.
Right. Right. You say, or even explaining, you know, right now I feel very vulnerable, very confused. I need 5 minutes. I'll be back. I need 10 minutes. I'll be right back. All right. So he talks about his feeling, his need, and then makes sure that she understands he's coming right back. He's not leaving.
So the couples that come to see you, when they come in couples, or is there a basic belief that they want to get together? Are they missing each other? What are they missing?
Yeah, the assumption that I make is that they both want to connect, and they both feeling a threat, a loss of the connection, equally. And they, the way they communicate is no longer a communication. It's a, some kind of a dance, a blame dance, or accuse and defend dance, some kind of dance, or find the bad guy, who is the bad guy dance, different dances that are very common, repetitive in every couple. And they get lost in it, and it, they actual feeling don't get communicated. So when I say, tell her how you feel, say, I just told her. But it's not the blame game feeling. It's not that that I mean. I mean, what's going on underneath it? What is the vulnerable feelings?
Okay, now you talk about vulnerable feelings. You get somebody who's angry, and you ask him to step out of that anger for a moment because the anger is showing you you hit its sore spot, right? You got the raw spot.
Right.
And then you say to them, okay, we're at your raw spot now. Could you dip into the raw? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Stay out of the surface.
Yeah,
now,
you
then
see,
get out of the
that's
trouble.
The surface.
Could you dip into the raw? Now, a person who is angry gets underneath it and says something like, you know, I'm really scared.
Right.
And it's such a tender thing to say.
Right. The whole tone of voice changes, their face changes. You say, I'm really scared. I'm scared that you don't love me anymore. I'm scared that I'm pushing you away. I'm terrified. And that's when the partner can hear. Yeah, and say, and then she could say, yeah, I'm terrified too.
She could, or she could use it against you. Or she could use it.
Oh, she could.
You know,
yeah.
It becomes one of those you're
right,
weak.
But if you did, then yeah, but all you, right, she could start with the attack, the counterattack. And that's when I interrupt her. I do a lot of interrupting in the session. I don't let them go and do what they do at home. I said, that you do that at home. Here, my job is to interrupt those patterns that don't work and get to the feelings. So,
I love, Aura, that you teach people how to identify those feelings, because I think that while you're speaking and when people, when they escalate into the, whatever we want to call the story, the drama, the dance, we really lose sight. And I think that people don't know how to identify their feeling. They might feel that, like you say, the butterfly in the stomach. But I have people every day in therapy that say, I don't know how I feel. And I'll say, well, can you partialize? Can you identify where in your body you're feeling it? And I think sometimes it's very difficult for people to actually say to, especially in the heat of an argument, someone who they love with and they're trying to connect, how is it that I feel? And I like when you said sort of panic and fearful. You know, I think we can all relate to that. But to be able to say anything more than that sometimes is a little bit difficult. So doing a great job with interrupting, I think it helps.
Yes. So the fear is one, and the other one is the hurt. You know, that hurts me when you say those things, because it makes me feel like you don't know me. So I'm alone. know, when you say things that I don't really see about myself, I don't really believe about myself, you say them and it feels foreign and you don't know me.
That's the funny thing about being an analyst, you know, and being a therapist too. Very often people will analyze each other and therapize each other and they'll tell the other person what they're thinking. Now, let's say you're right. Let's say you're accurate. Let's say your partner says to you, I'm really mad at you. And you say, no, you're not. You're really hurt. Nobody likes what we call mind raping. Mind raping is when you accurately get underneath the feeling that's being presented to another feeling that may be covered up. But nobody likes it exposed. That's why the highest rate of disturbance among adolescents is among those that are the children of therapists. Because the therapists are always raping their kids' minds. That's not what you're really feeling. You're really angry. You're really this. You're really that. A teenager wants to be able to develop their own caverns. You know, they want to be able to hide in their own places. So one of the mistakes that people make very often is they try to interpret the other person's emotions beyond where the person is conscious. And as a therapist, you do that, but you don't do that. You do it more with an invitation.
Exactly. You ask a question. You make a suggestion. Is it possible that you also, and you don't deny that they're angry, but you also, instead of saying, no, you're not, you also hurt. And you're also scared. So you make a suggestion or you ask them a question.
Now, this connection part about early childhood and this primal fear. So in early childhood, we all had one kind of a primal reaction to a caretaker, you said, who was primarily in charge. And the caretaker who's primarily in charge is giving us, it can't be perfect. They're going to go away, they're going to get angry, they're going to have one thing or another, and we will trigger. I know a woman who's got a mother who's an elderly mother, and the elderly mother drinks. And nowadays, the elderly mother drinks just to keep herself going. She's 85 years old, and she just kind of keeps herself tipsy and getting through. Well, of course, she falls down. And of course, she gets hurt. And of course, the daughter who's concerned about her, having left the mother alone, feels responsible. So she gets angry at her mother for drinking. But what's really going on is that the child feels responsible for something way before then, an early primal thing. And when examining it, we found that that very child had a father who drank and felt almost responsible for her father's drunkenness. So now you have this kind of primary reaction, secondary reaction, going back to a primal reaction. And the reason she's getting so upset at her 85-year-old mother who decides to have a couple of glasses of wine, even though I'm not condoning it, but, you know, it's what is she, that's what she does. It's her life. Is because it goes back to the primal fear. And that primal fear is somehow I caused this to happen. Somehow this is my doing, you know? So we have secret parts of our brains that are always in operation. And it would be great if we could learn to identify it while our bones are still flexible enough to dance.
Yeah.
But most of us don't. We just stupidly go along one after another, the same dance. Why do men always cheat? Why do men always lie to me? Why can't women be trusted? It's the same dance. It's the primal dance. It's going backward to that original raw spot that never got healed. Is it possible to heal the raw spot, not in a relationship?
It's possible in the very other forms of friendships. You know, it doesn't have to be a lover or a husband or life partner. It could be if you have one or two, up to, I don't know, five good friends with whom you can get together and have a heart-to-heart. That's what we all need for emotional sustenance. Sustenance, is that the word?
That's a good
sustenance.
Word.
Sustenance, yeah.
Well, that's great. That's like Linda's group of women. I have that with the men's group.
Yes.
But the other thing, too, Aura, isn't there a way to take your raw spot? Because what would a raw spot be? A raw spot is a feeling that I had when I was a kid that I couldn't handle as a kid.
Yeah.
So what I did was I got angry, for example, because you left me. I felt outrage. But rather than feel the outrage, I toned myself down. I ate.
Yeah.
I did something to cut off the feeling.
Right.
Now, your work, as I understand your work, being the most intense work of anybody I know, you do the most intense, deep feeling work. Isn't your work to uncover the raw spot and let the person feel it in its original source, and by that, giving it air so that it will heal?
Yes, and there's an additional step there. In addition to feeling it in its raw spot where it started, you also learn to parent yourself in a better way than your parent did. Because what I find happens is that your relationship with yourself becomes a repetition of your relationship with the parents. So if they used to yell at you, now you yell at yourself. If they used to abandon you or ignore you, now you ignore yourself. And I teach the people to say, look what just happened. You just yelled at yourself. And look and think about, what do you really need? What does this child really need? The child, and sometimes they can't really figure it out unless, only when I say, well, if it was a baby, if we had a baby here, what would you do? If it was a child outside of you, what would you do? And that's when they get in touch with, oh, okay, I would know what to do. I would hold it. I would calm it down. So you say, all right, that's what you need to do with yourself. Instead of eating or drinking or yelling at yourself, you need to find a way to calm yourself emotionally and learning how to parent yourself.
Very often what you'll do is you'll hand them a pillow and have them hold the pillow as if they were holding themselves.
That's right.
Which would be different. Johnny, you had a question.
I just had a question for Aura. Because a lot of women that I speak to and friends that are in relationships feel that, you know, trust is betrayed, like, over and over and over again. And a lot of women get to the point where they just give up. They say, you know, because, you know, they put themselves out there and then they get betrayed, you know, their partner does something where, you know, knocks the trust out. Like, is there any way to get back to that point where you can trust that person again? Like, because that's really hard to trust again.
Yeah, it's very hard. The patterns are very, very toxic. I think it's very important for women to know that men feel the exact same way and for men to know that women feel the exact same way. It's not unique to any gender. So that when a trust gets betrayed, I have to assume that he feels the same way. And I then need to reestablish the safety, the emotional safety in the relationship. So the first step is to interrupt the negative pattern, the destructive patterns, which is very hard because they really pull on you. Before you know it, you're there. So you can learn it in therapy because first the therapist interrupts it and then you learn to interrupt it on your own. And then to start reestablishing the safe place.
Well, you know, the only other part of it I think, and John, I agree, very often people build their safety on some kind of a fantasy. I love this person. They're totally trustworthy, even though they happen to be 50 years old and never been married and live with their mother. Right? I trust them completely. They're really of sound mind. They're never going to do anything to hurt me. And then all of a sudden you find, oops, they're a little bent. Now what you do is when you go back, you don't trust as much. You say, okay, with a little doubt. And I can still love you. And I'm a little skeptical. And I'm a little sure you're going to throw the ring at me. But it's okay. Because that's part of your 10%, and I love the 90%. Instead of trying to love the 100% over and over again. So I think trust could be reestablished, but it could be a conditional trust.
Yeah.
All right, now that we know each other a little better, we'll keep our eyes open.
I trust that you're going to be the way you are, rather than trust you're going to be my fantasy. I trust that you're going to be the way you are, and the way human beings are.
As frail as you are. This is Armand DeMille with Aura Yamini Morrison, Linda Vanella, Jonna Valerio. We're being set for tomorrow, we're going to be having our fundraiser here at WBAI. Be sure to tune in. We won't be starting at our normal 1 o'clock because we will be running into some kind of premium offer in advance. But stick with us after 1. We'll be on with you, and we're going to be talking about narcissism. We're going to take a short break when we come back. By the way, in response to your letter about associates, yes, the Positive Mind is always looking for licensed clinical practitioners to become associates who practice work with a Positive Mind. Always be in touch with me if you have that available to you. So let me see. This is Armand Demille. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Sonny Fortune and his band. From now on, be so nice. Now, many years ago, I was a jazz musician myself, and I used to work with a number of people who were jazz artists, and I became a therapist, and later these people came to me for counseling. One of the things about most of the people who I played with jazz, or most of the people I hung out with, which were old-time jazz musicians, they weren't very good at communicating. They couldn't communicate in words, but with their instruments, they were fabulous. They were fabulous. So a man came to see me once, and he comes in, and his father died, and he brought his, and he was trying to tell me. I said, "What did you feel?" He said, I didn't feel anything. I said, "Show me what you feel." I didn't feel anything. And he had his trumpet. I said, "Pick up your trumpet and show me on the trumpet what you felt." And he played this wailing, deep blues that was just a riff. It was like just ran it through. And he said, "That's what I felt." I said, "Oh, that's sad." He said, "That's sad?" I said, "That's sad." So I helped him identify it. Now, the reason I played you Sunny Fortune just now is I'm going to replay just this tiny section of it. And I want you to imagine that Sunny Fortune is talking to you, and he's trying to tell you his story of what's going on inside of him. He's trying to tell you what's happening inside him. But he doesn't have the words to say it. So he says it through his instrument. And as you heard the frenzy build, part of you tuned out to it. He started getting more and more animated. So instead, imagine you're a therapist who's listening to somebody go through their primal experience of what they're trying to communicate, and the words don't make a difference. The words don't make a difference. Here's what he's trying to tell us. I'm trying to tell you a story now. It's complex. So this is what we do. We listen to the music, and we have all the different forms of music. And one of the forms of music that we hear very often is this primal rage that comes out of people. And it just appears out of nowhere. You don't expect it. Part of the problem with alcohol is that it tends to cut through immediately to the primal rage. And it doesn't skip its steps in between. There are no steps in between. You go from the front door to the cellar, and you're right down there, and you're either in the anger or you're in the whatever the loudness is, but you just cut through all the barriers immediately. Trouble with alcohol and a lot of other drugs, they do that. They cut you through. But what do you do when you've noticed this rage? How do you notice it? Linda, how do you know when a couple is caught in this primal rage and it has no meaning whatsoever? The words don't mean anything because you're really dealing with the pain underneath.
Well, I think what we were speaking about before was this primal panic, as Aura had mentioned, that you can see that it could take just sometimes even body language. It doesn't even have to be a word. You could see a couple sit in front of you, and all of a sudden she'll look down, or she'll move her shoulder, or he'll move his arm, or even turning his leg. And you'll see there's something that just happened that brought those two people to that primal rage, that primal panic, that primal spot that sometimes they can't even, as you say, or you get now, you embrace the conversation and ask how they feel. They can't even describe it. But they went right to that narcissistic, that right primal place of what I consider panic, and it just stops them. And I think that's when you'll see those fight or flight. One will either want to run out or someone will want to hit. You'll get that want, that connection, that desire for connection will become so intense. But that's where I see the spot goes immediately, and it's very easy to see and identify.
Yes, and what it makes me think of is that one-year-old, when the mother steps away for just a minute, and the child, you see immediately, it's like, and you see the panic. It happens so quickly with one-year-old. And we think we're grown up, we don't feel the same way, we're not kids, but there is some feeling with our primary person in life. Those same feelings are there. And it happens particularly when people have first established a very strong connection, falling in love, getting to know each other, being extremely interested in each other, extremely connected, emotionally vibrating together. And then when the fighting starts, you feel like you're losing that connection.
Either losing the connection, you know, but the connection that you could be losing is the fantasy of a connection. Like very often we put a white fence around a house immediately. Oh, I met this guy. He was really wonderful. He's really fantastic. He's really amazing. He's a great lover. And you do this whole thing. You build up the fantasy. So what begins to crack is the fantasy. And we want to hold on to the fantasy because reality is sitting underneath it. Now, reality could be quite beautiful. Look, he's not as good as you thought he was, but he's a pretty nice guy. But no, I want my fantasy man because my fantasy man will fulfill my primal need.
Right.
See? My fantasy man's going to be the daddy who walked away. My right. fantasy man's going to be the mommy who's going to take care of me.
Right. And it's going to be 100%. It's not going to be 85%. It's going to be 100%.
And therefore, when they show me that they're not 100%, I have to junk them, leave them, and move on to something else. Or go numb completely. This is Armand DeMille with Ori Amini Morrison, Linda Vanella, and Jana. We're talking about relationships and how people get stuck in this primal part. When you get into that place where you're in a relationship and the two of you are just fighting over nothing and you feel disconnected. Disconnected. That's a feeling. It's an amazing feeling. You can imagine loving someone. I'm sure you've all had this experience. When you feel this total love for a partner, you look at them. And, but actually, you know, I could do that right now. I know you so long already. It's so easy because I do love you, and I could actually see. I have that loving feeling towards you. I couldn't imagine in 100 years not having this feeling. I can't even picture it. Yet I am sure there's some place where we would step on each other's toes, where that feeling would disappear for a moment. But I can't imagine. I can't imagine that feeling going away. I can't imagine disliking you. But I know it's possible. And if you do that with people you love very much, people who you... I'm similar.
But I think that, you know, I think it goes together. I think it's that love that you have, that respect, that desire to be connected that makes you so vulnerable. So therefore, all the more you want that connection to be real and to be present. So that primal fear and panic could be almost exact. Like I wouldn't expect if my, like, or okay, I have her as a dear friend, but I wouldn't expect her to criticize me. My primal is self-inadequacy. And I know once I feel I'm self-inadequate, oh my goodness, I just panic. I can't imagine Aura doing that because she knows me well enough to know how that spot would hurt. So therefore, I'm giving her, by virtue of my relationship with her, I'm giving her license. So it doesn't have to be a marriage vow. It could be a simple friendship. I'm allowing her into my life. I want to be connected to her. But she knows me well enough to know that all she has to do is criticize that I could see as criticism, and she might be just saying something, passing along a comment, but yet I would take it. Because I love her, I would say, oh my goodness, it went right to my core. Whereas a stranger might say the very same thing, but yet it wouldn't hurt me to that degree.
But it's even more complex, Linda, because there are times that she could say something that would go to your core, and it could be because Aura's bent. You know, you got the Aura core. And then it's Aura's bent spot saying that to you, like criticizing you, looking at you if she's feeling fat and she looks at you and say, oh, you look so skinny, something like that, and it just goes to your core. And there are other times it won't go to your core, because if you're feeling confident about yourself, it doesn't touch you. You go over and you say, oh, boobikins. Boobikins?
Bumpkins.
Boobikin. I made up a new expression. Boobikins. Yeah. And you go over and you kiss her on the nose and you say, oh, that's one of my Facebook people, boobikins. And you kiss her on the nose instead and say, oh, I understand you don't love me anymore.
Yeah.
So our sensitivity is kind of reactive both ways. It's when the primal gets hit in both spots that couples are at their worst. And when they're at their worst, it sends them off in a frenzy everywhere, trying to find some kind of peace. Look, my friends, life is not easy. I answered a question recently from a dear friend, someone who wrote to me, and she said, how do you get to recover from such damage? And I wrote to her, I said, crave sanity. Crave it. Yearn for sanity. Yearn for it. Ache for it. Not with depression. Not with blame. Yearn for sanity like you're on fire. And wish that you could be in your sanest self. And when craziness comes your way or invites you, step aside. You fight for that lost child inside you, and you invite that child, and you say, I'm not going to take you anywhere bad anymore. With this attitude, you get there faster. Then you also crave decency. Crave decency. Crave that people would be decent with each other, but crave that you would be decent with people. And then crave that you would be decent with yourself. Wish to yourself every day, hey, you know, I gotta love me better. And I'm going to try to. Crave honesty. But not just the honesty of another human being. Crave your own honesty. The power to tell yourself the truth without criticizing yourself. And to be yourself in front of people. Implore smiles. Try to not get them to happen, but almost invite them. Forgive stupidity. Forgive it.
bypass gossip. Don't smile unless you agree, and don't frown out of habit. If you smile when you don't agree with something, you reinforce it. So if something sees somebody walking down the street and says, hey, maybe nice bottom, don't smile. Don't reinforce it. The other things I understood about life over time was don't fix everything. Just because it's broken, you don't have to fix it, and certainly don't give advice. Nobody really wants it. I also like, for the end of January here, as we step into our February of 12, develop your glint. You know, how's your glint? Quite a few people have no glint left at all. And love your crow's feet. They're important. Now, intelligence, that's a very important thing, but it's questionable. What is intelligence? How much you remember? Or how much you create? What is intelligence? You can't kind of look at intelligence and say, oh, it's all wonderful. And attractiveness, being attractive. And I'm filled with a room full of 3 out of 4 beautiful people. You being the 3 and I'm being the 4th. But the attractiveness, the reason they gave us attractiveness is it's our invitation to teach. They give the good looks to the people who will become the teachers. And remember, that's the only reason I have the good looks. Because people will find it nice to look at you and therefore listen to what you have to say. Talent is cheap. Love is ordinary. Everybody has it. It's no big deal. Caring is often for the wrong reason. Fear is usually imaginary. Guilt. Now, there's a big one for you, friend. That plagues you. Guilt. It's a thought, not a feeling. I want you to pay attention to that. You think guilty. I know the German people are going to excuse me for this, but to say I am guilty in German, you have to say something reflexive like in Guiltenschaften stuck, which means I enguilt myself. I put it on myself. Lastly, home is a feeling. It's not a place. Try to land into that place that you have inside you, home. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. Sorry for that loose self on my computer last night. I will be, if you want to look, by the way, on the Facebook page, I just put up a wonderful something about what it is to be a solitary bird. I'm going to let you find it yourself rather than read it for you. It's on the Facebook page. I just put it up there. I found it in Carlos Castaneda's Dreams of Power. There is no Tales of Power, those of you who remember that book, just accidentally. And I decided to bring it to all of you. We will be back with you tomorrow, just about 1-ish. Now, that should be 1:10-ish, 1:11-ish, 1:15-ish, according to WBAI, which has this wonderful new way of exercising your mind so that you never know exactly what's happening when, but just about, so that you can keep your mind active, which is a very good thing. Because otherwise, you know, you just get bored and sit around and just be redundant. So we'll be back with you tomorrow, somewhere around 1 o'clock, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. The email address is, you can send us email at armand@thepositivemind.com. And you go to the website, thepositivemind.com, you want to get in touch, especially those professionals. I'm looking for new professionals, licensed mental health professionals who want to join in this positive mind adventure. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.